On this Martin Luther King Day, a story now that starts after King's assassination on April 4th, 1968. In the racially charged days after Reverend King was killed, a young white priest, the Reverend John Brooks, drove the country looking for young black high school students to recruit for the almost totally white Jesuit school where he taught, the College of the Holy Cross in Worcester, Massachusetts. Among the young men who came, a future U.S. Supreme Court Justice, Clarence Thomas, a future Pulitzer Prize-winning author, Edward Jones, one, Eddie Jenkins, became a Super Bowl champion. Another, Ted Wells, represented Scooter Libby when he was charged in the Valerie Plame case. Diane Brady tells their stories in her fascinating new book, Fraternity. She's a reporter for the Bloomberg Businessweek and joins us from the NPR studios in New York. Diane, welcome.
Nice to be here. Thanks.
And we're also joined by someone, I think, sitting right there with you, one of the former Holy Cross students, Stan Grayson. He would become New York's City Finance Commissioner and Deputy Mayor for Finance and Economic Development in the 80s. Stan, welcome to you as well.
Thank you. Glad to be here.
And Stan, if you would just talk about that time first, 1968, you had already been recruited to Holy Cross to play basketball. But you pole vault into this time that started with the assassination of Martin Luther King and went through the Vietnam protests and upheaval, not to mention what you were confronting, which was race.
People were confused, troubled, angry. When I got to Holy Cross, I think it was really also trying to find its way. You know, I think the one thing that time did, it brought a bunch of black students together who were from, by and large, urban America, who had kind of had similar experiences, struggling to kind of make sense of what was going on socially, politically, and the like. And I think in that core group, there was a lot of comfort because we were together and were able to kind of commiserate, discuss, share visions, conclusions. So it was a strange time, but you know, you sort of had a lot of help getting through those strange times.
Especially since you landed in Worcester, Massachusetts. Now, it's got beautiful campuses. It's in an area where there's a lot of fading mill towns. And at that time, not a lot of black faces.
Not a lot of minority faces, period.
Yeah. So, Diane, about how many black students are we talking about coming with Stan to Holy Cross in 1968?
Well, there were a total of 20, including Clarence Thomas, who transferred as a sophomore. And then prior to that, there had been essentially one or two a year. I think one came on an athletic scholarship. One would come through the academic route. And essentially, I think you would have been looking at 28.
So, Stan, take us through this. You arrived. Now, you had gone to a largely white school in Detroit where, you know, you just won the state championship, I think, with your high school team. So it could be said that you were maybe more comfortable than some of your friends around white students, but just what was the feel like when you first got to campus?
Well, when I first got to campus, you know, I think a natural reaction is who that looks like me is also here. Back then, we ate family style, which is very interesting, that we would all go to the dining hall and sit down and be served and eat together, which I think created an opportunity after we met a few of us black students to kind of say, what time are you going to dinner, and sit down and have that hour, hour and a half together once or twice a day to sit and chat.
Well, you know, it's interesting because as you start to see, as Diane's story unfolds, what starts to happen is that many of the black students self-segregate. They want to sit together to eat. They form a black student union. Some of them want to live together on a corridor. It would be called the Black Corridor. And this became very controversial. And wait a second, the whole idea was to create this diversity. And now, you know, there's a movement to sort of segregate.
You're absolutely right. But I would say you have to go back to the times.
Right.
And the one thing that I will say that I think allowed me to successfully navigate Holy Cross was having the Black Corridor. My sophomore year, Father Brooks agreed that we could live together, even though we called it a black corridor. But my roommate and half of the folks on the floor were, in fact, white.
Right.
But it still created a focal point on campus where it was like a safe haven for us all.
So, Diane, I think it's time that, you know, that we've set a little of this scene, that we talk a little bit about Father Brooks, who's still alive today, but who is the man who was on this mission to recruit black students, inspired, you know, by the life of Martin Luther King and then determined to do something in response to his death. Who was this man?
He's a very strong personality, and it was striking that a lot of the people I talked to who knew him, that was very clear that what John Brooks wanted, John Brooks pretty much went and got, and I should say Father Brooks, but he is very much, a dominant personality and took it upon himself to not only say, okay, if we're going to do this, let's get it done, but where's the money? And at this juncture, to sit down in a restaurant and, in some cases, personally choose men and simply work around the process, the admissions process. It was Father Brooks that picked them. It was not the usual admissions committee.
The thing that I most appreciated about him was not just his interest in me as an athlete, but he was always concerned about you, the person. You know, I can't tell you the times he would say, I know all that, I read all that, but what do you think? And so he was the kind of guy who taught many of us how to think, I think, by asking probing questions and constantly reminding us when we needed to be reminded why we were in college, and that was to get an education.
And I think that's important because, you know, one thing, there was a big divide. People talk about affirmative action, but there was never any sense that the academic standards would be bent. There was no special concessions, correct me if I'm wrong, Stan.
No,
it was you did the essays, you got the marks, you either got it or you didn't. Where there were concessions was on the social front.
But, you know, Father Brooks didn't always agree with that. He agonized over the Black Corridor, although he went along with it. And there was another time, Stan Grayson, when some of the students pushed to get the lyrics to the school song changed.
That was you, Stan.
Yes,
that was, yeah. You apparently winced every time you heard it. Do you even remember it now?
Oh, I do. Old Mamie Riley. Where'd you get that hat? Down in Old Kentucky from Old Black Joe were the words to the song.
Well, and Brooks had sung it lustily. You know, people loved the song. What did it mean to you?
It showed a lack of sensitivity is what it meant to me. And I think to the extent that you've got a growing Black population on campus, it just seemed inappropriate.
There was some debate. He insisted that this was a tradition. But to you, again, it was what? A throwback to slavery, Jim Crow?
Exactly.
Yeah.
Exactly.
And
to his credit, he, notwithstanding his initial reaction, he listened to the arguments and concluded, tradition or not, that Holy Cross is bigger than that. I think that's one of the things that many of my colleagues think is special about Holy Cross. They're able to recognize right from wrong and acknowledge, frankly, when things aren't exactly right or what they could be or should be.
Stan Grayson, one of several young African Americans recruited by Holy Cross priest John Brooks after the assassination of Martin Luther King. Their story is told in Diane Brady's new book, Fraternity. In 1968, Newsweek estimated there were more than 6 million undergrads in U.S. colleges, but only 275,000 were Black, about 4%, and only a handful at Holy Cross. Some of the other things they faced, they had to organize field trips to Boston just to meet girls. But then Black students at Holy Cross confronted institutional racism. We're going to hear more about that in a minute, here and now.
Funding for Here and Now comes from MathWorks, creators of MATLAB and Simulink technical computing software, accelerating the pace of discovery in engineering and science. Find over 200 job openings at mathworks.com.
Welcome back. We're speaking with Diane Brady, the author of the new book Fraternity, which tells the story of the Holy Cross professor, Father John Brooks, who was motivated by the death of Martin Luther King to travel cross-country recruiting African-American students to come to the largely white school. Students like future Supreme Court Justice Clarence Thomas, future lawyer Ted Wells, and Stan Grayson, who'd go on to become a high-ranking New York official and who joins us now. And Stan, take us back to 1969. Now, Black and white students tried to block the big defense contractor, GE, from recruiting at Holy Cross. Students were identified from protest photos. They were suspended. But the Black students said Blacks were identified disproportionately because there were so few on campus. They were easier to identify than the whites. So Blacks called for a walkout.
This is my sophomore year when this happened, and early on in the basketball season, and I was in New York playing my first varsity game. When I got back to campus, the lights were all on the campus, and Ted Wells met me at the bus and explained to me what happened. And, I think like most of the students, thought about it, spoke to my mom and dad, told them what had happened, told them what my view was, that I thought if the black students were going to leave, that I was also going to leave.
And we should say they decided to have a walkout in protest.
That's exactly right.
And the walkout is quitting school. It wasn't simply just...
Right.
Well, Stan, you could have, all of you, as I was reading this, I was thinking, you're about to throw away these college educations.
I will tell you, there were a number of my hallmates, roommates, who came to me and said, listen, you're playing basketball, the season's just started. If you want to stay, we understand, you know. So I think when I decided to leave, many of my colleagues said, if Stan's going and risking what we think is a very bright future for him, then we're going as well.
Well, you held a dramatic press conference, threw down your IDs, walked out, Father Brooks passing some money to you as you left. The student body threatened a boycott in support of the black students. The local papers editorialized against you. Father Brooks arranged a debate. It became heated, but it convinced the then president, the Reverend Raymond Swords, to lift all the suspensions. Very powerful story. But Stan, fast forward to 1972. Father Brooks is now Holy Cross president himself. And you and the black students take over a building protesting for more black faculty and courses. President Brooks asked you to leave, saying he'll personally look into the charges. Now, everyone did leave. Do you think this was only possible because of the trust that had been built up between the students and Father Brooks?
I think absolutely. I think there was always a sense that Father Brooks was a man of his word. You know, I think at that time, leading up to this building takeover, there was just growing frustration that, you know, there were a lot of things that black students felt the college could and should do to make it a better place.
Stan, I have to ask you,
sure.
We haven't yet mentioned one of the other students you were with, Clarence Thomas,
mm-hmm.
who, you know, many people now know Clarence Thomas for his strong stand against affirmative action. And, you know, it, as we obviously note, you know, he benefited from it. He was one of your fellow recruits. Have you had conversations with him about that? What's your sense of that?
We've talked over the years and, you know, basically we agree to disagree in large part on the relevance and importance of affirmative action. You know, I contend that Clarence bases his premise on the fact that the world is perfectly round. In my view, the world's not perfectly round, so you can't start with that premise, and therefore there are needs to kind of equalize or stabilize things, and affirmative action is one of those tools that was created to do that.
You know, one thing that's interesting, when I spoke to Justice Thomas about his experience at Yale versus his experience at Holy Cross, at Holy Cross he never felt that people questioned his intelligence, that they questioned his right to be there, and that he clearly would have gotten in on his own merits. He was a member of the equivalent of the Honors Society. And when he got to Yale, he felt that it was very much a case where he was diminished in the eyes of his fellow students. And then when you fast forward to what he thinks happened in the years after, he talks about the sheer volume of people trying to get minority students on campus, that he felt students that were being brought into places where they couldn't cut it, where they perhaps would not have gotten in otherwise on their own merits. Now, that's debatable, but that's the view that he has today in terms of why he thinks affirmative action overall has been demeaning to minorities and has not worked.
And just to quickly note, Clarence Thomas, as a student, showed some of these signs of, you know, maybe perhaps a contrarian view. You know, when you were in school, he was sort of the debater, the person who wanted to, you know, be on the other side of something just to see what would happen.
No question. He liked the lively conversation. He liked the lively discussion, and often would go out of his way to sort of engage others in a discussion by taking a what I would call a contrary position on a given subject.
And then there was Ted Wells, became a lawyer, as we said, represented Scooter Libby, you know, kind of a famous client. You, as we said, worked for the City of New York and also one of the country's oldest minority-owned investment banks. Edward Jones wrote the Pulitzer Prize-winning novel, The Known World. Some have died, but those who are living, have you stayed in touch?
I'm in touch with all of those. With, you know, 4 years in college together, and particularly at Holy Cross, I think has created a bond that, you know, even my kids marvel at the relationship and the bond that I have and or we all have with each other.
I think that these men were a support network for each other, and I really do think they changed the college as much as the college changed them.
Yeah. That's Diane Brady. Her book is Fraternity. It tells the story of the handful of black students recruited by the largely white Holy Cross College in 1968. One of them, Stan Grayson, also joined us. Stan, Diane, thank you so much.
Thank you.
Thank you.
And take just a second to look ahead. Tomorrow on Here and Now, critics say recent FDA rules about antibiotics and farm foods are useless, but is there a bigger plan afoot? That's tomorrow. Still ahead today, why are the super rich still investing in real estate? Wasn't that the bubble that blew? Latest news is next, Here and Now.
Support for Here and Now comes from the listeners of WBUR Boston, where the program is produced, and by the Harvard Art Museums, from Chinese jades to Jasper Johns, Byzantium to Bernini. Learn more at harvardartmuseums.org. And by the Institute of Contemporary Art Boston, with Isaac Julian's 10,000 Waves, a 9-screen video installation featuring Maggie Chung, ICABoston.org.